Hello and welcome to Mind the Chat, the podcast from Mind in Kingston. I'm Vicky Bourne, the charity's counselling and wellbeing coordinator. Regular listeners will know that in this series, I talk to a range of people with a connection to Kingston about their experiences with mental health. The hope is that if you're one of the many people out there struggling, hearing how others have coped might help you out. Do take care when listening. Some of what you'll hear could be triggering. And if that's the case, don't hesitate to seek the support of a medical professional. In this edition,
I just couldn't see how I could carry on, and I couldn't even see how I could, you know, just enduring the next minute or the next few minutes was so painful emotionally and psychologically. I just felt like I couldn't do it, and I didn't have any resources, and I didn't have any strengths, and I didn't have the mental capacity to do it. I just felt like I was completely broken.
Rhianne Hall. She suffered from postnatal depression. It affects more than one in every 10 women within a year of giving birth. These days, Rhianne's a happy and loving mother to 22-month-old Annabelle. But the final month of her pregnancy and the months after Annabelle's birth were challenging, to say the least. It changed her life. I started by asking Rhianne what her life was like before she became a mother.
So I was a lawyer. I was an employment lawyer in London. And I was, enjoying my job, working hard, and had lots of friends in work, lots of friends where I lived in Southwest London, and I had quite a busy life. We'd go to hot yoga and played a lot of tennis, did a lot of sport and running, and lots of kind of mindfulness and looking after myself. And I was generally pretty well.
So you became pregnant with your first child.
The pregnancy was actually really good. I was on a low level of antidepressant at the start of the pregnancy. So I was actually on that before I got pregnant. So I'd had some low sort of mood and some anxiety in the past. So I was on some medication for that. And I started taking that for the first time a couple of years before I got pregnant. But I was kind of managing that really well. I had sort of probably low level of sort of depression and anxiety kind of on and off, but I was managing that with the medication and also lots of self-care and mindfulness and yoga and healthy living. I came off the medication having had a little chat with a GP, and I thought probably ideally I wouldn't want to be on medication during the pregnancy, but actually it was quite a safe medication. And with hindsight, I probably didn't know enough about the pros and cons of coming off medication during pregnancy, and I probably didn't have enough information about the length of time it can take for medication to come out of your system. And also, I didn't realise that, you know, sometimes in pregnancy, in the second trimester especially, you get elevated levels of certain hormones, so you can actually feel very well sometimes, and I did feel really well in pregnancy.
So coming off didn't seem to make a lot of difference to you?
It didn't, and actually I felt really well. I carried on exercising, I carried on doing a lot of yoga, and that may be one of the issues. I sort of carried on as if I wasn't really pregnant. I was so worried about getting ill and trying to keep my mood up with exercise and staying well. I probably psychologically didn't quite adjust to the fact that I was pregnant, because I didn't have some of the physical symptoms that some women have. I didn't have any morning sickness, or I didn't have any sort of stiffness or inability to move. So I could carry on. I was running, I was exercising. And I think that made it more difficult then to shift psychologically into the role of becoming a mum, when I just carried on almost as normal right through the pregnancy.
Sure. And towards the end of the pregnancy, I understand things became slightly more complicated.
Yeah, so the very last few days got a little bit complicated. So I'd thought I might have been breech, and I'd asked my one of the midwives to send me for a scan about 34 weeks because I thought I was breech, and she said no, she wouldn't, because she didn't believe I was. Then lo and behold, I got to my 40-week checkup, and a different midwife said immediately, oh, you are breech. So I was devastated then, because I wanted to have a natural birth. I was worried about having a cesarean, because I knew that that meant I wouldn't be able to exercise. And I was a bit worried about my mood and the impact of that, you know, having major surgery and also having a baby to look after. So I was really upset about that. And I'd had this idea in my mind that I was going to have this yoga birth and everything was going to be plain sailing, and I was going to have my birth plan, and it didn't go at all to plan.
And had you, like many women, myself included, been kind of led to believe that you could make a choice about what kind of birth you had? Had that been kind of put on the table for you?
I think it was, the message was almost, you know, if you think positively enough and you do enough work, then you can enable that to happen. But there was no way that was going to happen really for me with being breech, and also the fact that I hadn't known I was breech. Even my instinct was telling me you are breech, and that's why I asked for another scan, and that was refused. And I think at that point, rather than really push and kind of following my intuition and believe in myself, I think I just deferred and thought, you know, to the medical professionals, and thought, well, you know, they're the ones who know what's going on. But yeah, I definitely thought, I've done all the yoga, I've done all the hypnobirthing, I've practiced enough, like this is definitely going to happen, and it just didn't. And I think my expectations were so wildly off. I had put so much pressure on myself to have the birth that I wanted, and I put a lot of pressure on myself to breastfeed, and ended up having an emergency cesarean. Had a very traumatic procedure before I had that, which was called an ECV, where they tried to turn Annabelle.
That can be really painful.
Yeah, and I didn't have any idea how painful that would be, and also didn't have it really appreciate the kind of psychological impact of that trauma, because I think that was a big part of my depression. Then I had an emergency cesarean, and I couldn't breastfeed. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't get Annabelle to breastfeed. And then I went into a bit of a downward spiral of self-criticism and negative self-talk, saying that I hadn't had a natural birth, and I hadn't been able to breastfeed her, and I'm failing as a mother, and I'm not able to feed her properly, and there must be something wrong with me. And yeah, I went quite downhill after that.
So it's all about the gap between the social pressure to be that perfect parent and have a perfect birth and the actual reality, which is very different, I'd say, for the majority of women.
Yeah, and also that there's a very limited amount of control. And, you know, some people do have fantastic births and everything goes smoothly and they do end up having the birth they want, which is absolutely brilliant. But the majority of people that I know, that hasn't happened for them. And I think for me, I probably put a lot of pressure on myself to try and achieve something which ultimately was out of my control, and then I blame myself for not being able to do that, and I also blame myself for, you know, not being that mum that can breastfeed and not being that mum that can just like be out and seamlessly feeding the baby. I was at home having battles with nipple guards and then expressing, and I was told that I should be expressing, you know, in the middle of the night when Annabelle was asleep so that my supply would be up. So I just put a lot of pressure on myself, and I suppose I perceived myself as a failure and felt that I had to work extra hard to try and put things right, and things didn't really go to plan, and then we ended up going back into hospital.
And of course it's a time when as well as the trauma of a birth, you have a lot of, you know, you don't get much sleep, and you're generally feeling quite run down, and often surrounded by people that seem to be coping so much better than you are.
Yeah,
people put on such a mask during this time, don't
that's
they?
The thing, I think luckily I've got some amazing friends who had children at the same time, and they had their children slightly before me, and they were really honest with me. And a lot of my friends did say to me, look, it is really hard, and I'm not enjoying this bit, and it's really tough, and I'm struggling. So I was in good company there with people understanding and being open and honest. But there's certainly a huge pressure on women, particularly, to kind of have a child and then almost bounce back as if that wasn't a major deal, and kind of go back into being out and meeting friends for coffee and resuming exercise, getting your figure back, not sometimes just saying, I'm really struggling with this and it's not what I thought it would be, and it's really difficult, and I'm tired and I'm exhausted and I'm not caring for myself and I'm not coping, which is what happened with me.
You were describing, as I said, the emotions that a lot of women experience. But how long was it until you realised that things were really quite bad for you?
I think I realised initially after about five or six days. We got readmitted to hospital on day three because Annabelle was dehydrated because of all the breastfeeding issues, and she was quite poorly then, so we had to stay in hospital in the paediatric ward overnight, and that was another difficulty for us to deal with. After about 6 or 7 days, I just broke down and I said I couldn't cope. This was the worst thing that's ever happened. It's been a terrible experience. What have I done? I'm constantly crying. I'm constantly feeling anxious and I'm feeling low. And I started feeling suicidal in that first week. And then I went to a doctor and told him how I was feeling. And he said I was having a stress reaction.
Were they all totally new feelings for you? Had you ever felt anything like that before?
I hadn't had thoughts of suicide before. And I'd never really felt that hopeless. And I'd never really felt that sense of helplessness and just an inability to cope. And I just couldn't see how I could carry on. And I couldn't even see how I could, you know, just enduring the next minute or the next few minutes was so painful emotionally and psychologically. I just felt like I couldn't do it, and I didn't have any resources and I didn't have any strength and I didn't have the mental capacity to do it. I just felt like I was completely broken at that time.
So what happened after that?
So I went to see the GP and he said that I was having a stress reaction to some traumatic events and that I needed some family support and some help, but not to label it as PND and not to rush to meds.
So it was kind of quite played down then by the sound of it.
Yeah, and I didn't have a follow-up appointment booked in after that. And I think probably it would have been best to have another appointment scheduled for the week after to keep an eye on a new mum who's saying that she's depressed and feeling suicidal, particularly because suicide is the leading cause of death in new mums. So from the period of 6 weeks up to a year, the leading cause of death in new mums is suicide. So it's quite a shocking figure. So I kind of went on my way then and thought, okay, this is maybe it's normal. And I did sort of have family up to support me and started trying to come to terms with the fact that I couldn't breastfeed and tried to kind of get into a bit more of a routine. And I think I had a little bit of adrenaline guiding me then. And I just crashed after about 6 weeks. My depression was getting worse and worse. My mood was dropping and I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't eating. I was very anxious. And
you'd been to your GP, so it was difficult, I imagine, to know what path to take.
I felt a little bit lost there. I didn't know what to do because I felt like the GP was saying, well, this is just normal. This is okay. But at the same time, you know, I was thinking, this can't be normal. This is so bad. I feel so dreadful. So then I went back for my 6 week checkup, and at that point, a different GP diagnosed me with postnatal depression. And then the health visitor did an assessment with me called the Edinburgh Scale, which is the postnatal depression assessment. And I was pretty much at the high end of that. And then I started some medication, and I was too ill really to have therapy by that point. I wasn't really able to benefit from having kind of psychological intervention because I was too unwell. And then things kind of just escalated from there. My parents came down to live with me for a bit. They were really supportive and helping us out. And my friends were all being amazing, but nothing really was working. Medication didn't seem to be making a difference. And things kind of continued in that way until maybe 3 or 4 weeks later, when I was extremely suicidal by that point, and I ended up going into a mother and baby unit.
So was that done as an emergency?
So I went to A&E a couple of days before that. I was in contact with the GP by that point, and they were saying, you know, just stay on this dose of medication for a while. It takes 4 to 6 weeks to kick in.
It's a long time.
It's a long time when you're...
And you're feeling really desperate.
The medication wasn't working. So I went to A&E because the GP didn't really know what to do. And I spoke to a lovely mental health specialist nurse there, and she upped the doses of the medication. But things were just kind of going from bad to worse by that point, and I ended up going into a mother and baby unit.
And I gather there's only 21 mother and baby units in the country. They're wonderful institutions, but there just aren't many of them, are there?
No, there aren't. And It was really hard getting a bed. There aren't any in Wales. I'm from Wales and there are no mother and baby units at the moment in Wales. So women from Wales are having to travel to England to get care away from their families.
So that's really shocking. At a time when you're at your most vulnerable, to not be able to be near home makes such a difference for having visitors and everything.
Exactly. And there's also very patchy perinatal support in between. So what I felt for me, it was you either go to your GP, and there didn't really seem to be any perinatal support in the middle, because at the time there wasn't a service where I live. There'd been a cutting fund, so there wasn't actually a perinatal psychiatrist working in the area. There wasn't a special perinatal psychologist, so there really wasn't that specialist support available. So besides the GP and A&E, the next kind of resource really was a mother and baby unit, which is obviously quite extreme.
And you're lucky if you get a place.
Exactly. You're lucky if you get a place. And it's obviously not people's first choice. People want to be treated in their homes, in the community. So I ended up going into a mother and baby unit, which was necessary really for me because I was so ill. And that was in Bristol, which was obviously a long way from where I live, but my family and friends in Cardiff could come and visit me there. So that worked out pretty well in the circumstances. It was a place where I was looked after. I was put on different medication. I saw a psychologist there, and it was just a place where I was basically taken out of the world and put in a little bubble and
able to bond hopefully with your baby and re-establish your relationship.
That did come eventually, but
because we haven't really talked about that, have we? Was bonding one of the issues that you found difficult when you were feeling so low?
Yeah, I did, because I couldn't feel any kind of emotional warmth to anybody. And I didn't really have a connection with Annabelle when she was first born because I was so unwell. And you really are blocked when you have postnatal depression. Your feelings are so dampened and they're so blocked, and you're so overcome by negativity and, you know, sense of despair and helplessness that, you know, you don't really have any availability for warmth and connection with yourself, other people, let alone a baby. And I think that's another thing that a lot of women feel that they're not able to speak about. But lots of mums who have postnatal depression experience that. That is very normal.
And it's the last taboo, as you say, very difficult for people to be honest about, for fear of what might happen to them and fear of other people treating them as if they're, you know, very abnormal and unusual in some way.
Exactly. And that judgment and that stigma can reinforce the negative thinking that a person with postnatal depression is already experiencing, and that can make them feel even worse. But actually, it's really normal, even without postnatal depression, it's quite normal to have ambivalent feelings towards anyone in your life at certain times when you're feeling down and tired and exhausted, and when things are really difficult. It's perfectly normal to have feelings of ambivalence. That's what feelings are. They change and they come and go, and that's kind of healthy. And I think lots of mums and dads struggle and feel that motherhood and parenthood is really, really hard, but they also feel they're not able to say that, which can make them feel a bit isolated and a bit shame filled and like they're the only one. And they're not the only one. There's lots of people struggling out there.
You're so right. And it all comes back to, as we say, the pressure to be a perfect parent and seem to be coping very well. And for many people, that couldn't be further from the reality.
Exactly. And it just doesn't exist. There is no such thing as perfection. There's no such thing as a perfect parent. There's a great psychologist called Marshall Rosenberg. And he says, you know, if you want to make yourself feel bad, have a child and then put an expectation on yourself to be a perfect parent, and then you'll just feel dreadful, because it doesn't exist, and it's not real. And we use that ideal as something to beat ourselves up with and to measure ourselves against, and it can just make us feel really inadequate and as if we're not doing what we should be doing. But you know, we just have to do what we can with what we have and do our best.
So that should really be part of everybody's antenatal group and experience, shouldn't it? I think a good reality check.
Yeah, I think just honesty about how hard it is, and also the difficulty sometimes in the early attachment with a child. That's very normal, and that's not something to be ashamed of. And I've got a brilliant relationship with my daughter now.
How old is she now, Ria?
She's 2 in October, end of October. So she's like nearly 22 months. And she's absolutely incredible. We've got an amazing relationship, and people probably would never have thought that would have happened if you saw how ill I was in the beginning. people probably would have maybe worried about that, but the relationship does develop and it comes and it strengthens, and we've got a brilliant relationship now. And I think with people know that they can be supported to recover, that they can also establish a really strong relationship with their child, even if they have severe postnatal depression or even if they have psychosis after having a baby. It is possible to do that.
Absolutely. And that's a really positive message, actually, for people to take on board. And when you came out of the mother and baby unit, what really helped you kind of re-establish contact with the outside world and feel normal again?
I think it was a very gradual process of just maybe being with friends and being outside a lot helped. Going for walks in nature. I got back to doing my hot yoga, which really helped as well. Having some time off, so having some time to rest myself and doing the things that really make me feel good. Like I do a lot of singing and I was writing a lot and listening to music and trying to eat well and being around supportive people who understand and hear you and see you. So just like little things like that that make the huge difference.
And you've mentioned a wonderful support group. And I think so many women and men as well, of course, have benefited from such support groups. And again, we wish there were more of them. Is it the Cedar House? So tell us a bit about that.
So the Cedar House support group is run by an amazing woman called Liz Wise, who had postnatal depression herself, and she is also a counsellor. So she runs these postnatal depression support groups. There's one in Balham, there's a couple in Surrey, and they're places where you can go, mothers who've had children and been through the support group volunteer to look after the babies when you're in the group, and you have 2 hours to sit with other mums and just share how you are and to be heard and to be supported. It's not a, you know, it's not a counselling group. Like Liz is a counsellor and she does sort of use her counselling skills, but it's a support group. It's really peer support, people sort of talking about what they're going through, what's difficult for them, what might be working for them, asking for maybe for some advice, but just being heard.
And it's not the kind of place you have to be competitive about your baby's milestones. It's a place where you can be really honest about your feelings and feel comfortable in doing so, by the sound of it.
I've always felt so refreshed and replenished after going to those sessions and felt, oh my goodness, this is okay. And other people are in this with me and I'm not on my own and I'm not some kind of monster. This is totally okay. And people are with me in this. You know, that you also see people in different stages of their recovery. So you see people who are...
You can be a really positive role model for them and, you know, a chance to see that a really good recovery is possible.
Exactly. I think that's the main message. And that's what I wanted to get across with my podcast that I started called You, Me and PND. The message that you're not alone. It is possible to recover with support and you can actually go beyond surviving. You can thrive after having postnatal depression, and it doesn't have to be necessarily, you know, it's not the end of the story, and it doesn't have to be something dark which you should be ashamed of. It's something which happens. It's not anybody's fault, but it can actually be something which has really positive outcomes for people. And there's lots of people in the group who would say that even though it's a dreadful experience and they wouldn't necessarily want to go through that again, it has been something which has really strengthened them, and they're a different person because of that experience, and they see life in a different way, and they have actually seen positives coming from that experience.
Yes, that sounds amazing, because that was my next question, really. You've sort of changed your career path now, haven't you, and are working much more to look and support people with experiences of postnatal depression in different ways.
Yeah, that's right. So I started the podcast called You, Me and PND because I wanted there to be success stories out there for people to listen to if they maybe wouldn't be able to go to a group or they didn't know others who had postnatal depression. I wanted them to be able to listen and hear stories of hope from other people, but also practical advice and experiences of others. And I'm also working more generally in the mental health arena now. So I'm training as a mental health first aid instructor, and I hope to train people in mental health first aid so that they can go and use that in their lives and their businesses to support themselves and to support other people too.
And you've written a book, I believe.
I haven't finished it yet. So I wrote a little piece called Hope and the Black Balloon, and I created an animation with a really amazing illustrator and created this little video on YouTube. And that's the kind of prologue to the book. So then I started writing the book, which was about my experiences and what happened and, you know, the experience of being in a mother and baby unit. Yeah, I haven't done loads more on the book in the last few months.
I'm sure you're very busy with Annabelle.
Yeah, looking after her. And I think, you know, it was really therapeutic and it really helped me process a lot of what happened. If I'd have finished it, say, 6 months ago or a year ago, so much has changed and so many good things have come since then. So I think I'll get there at some point, but the story's still going.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. And I think your story is a great one of hope and inspiration, and particularly the message that recovery is possible. And also that, you know, we need to be talking so much more openly and honestly about these issues. And I think that alone would be a really helpful preventative for a lot of women going through similar things.
More and more people are talking about it, which is great. And I think gradually over time, the stigma will be reduced and more people will get help earlier, which is what's needed.
I was speaking there to Rhian Hall, host of the PND and Me podcast, and now also an active member and advocate of the Cedar House Support Group for women experiencing postnatal depression. Remember, once again, if you've been affected by any of the issues raised in this podcast, do seek the help and advice of a medical professional. And do check out the other chats in this series. You can find them wherever you usually download your podcasts. We'd be grateful if you've subscribed too, and maybe thought about leaving a review to help spread the word. I'm Vicky Bourne of Mind in Kingston, and until the next time, take good care.